From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. And today is the day in America we observe President's Day. And what a week it has been for the institution of the American presidency. On Saturday, former President Donald Trump's second impeachment trial ended in an acquittal. A majority of senators found he had incited the Capitol riot of January 6th, including 7 Republicans and all Democrats. But with a final vote of 57-43, that was 10 short of the two-thirds majority needed to convict a president. Sunday morning, Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin was on Meet the Press, offering this assessment of his Republican colleagues.
Many of the Republicans were voting out of loyalty to Donald Trump. For those who want to know what Donald Trump's version of loyalty is, I have two words, Mike Pence. Many of them were voting out of fear. What would happen if they went home? I would just ask them to take a reflection on the future of their party, which embraces QAnon conspiracy and Proud Boys, and then shuns Cindy McCain and Bill Cassidy. What is the future of a Republican Party in that posture?
Across the aisle, Congresswoman Mary Miller, the freshman Republican from southeastern Illinois, reacted with a comment on Facebook. Quote, "The vote is in and President Trump has been acquitted. It is time for Democrats to move beyond their irrational hate of President Trump and focus on the issues important to the people of this country. It is time to put America first." End quote. Meanwhile, everyday Illinoisans are also reacting to the news. This morning we got a voicemail from Deborah Ann in Monticello, who said in part,
"I thought this impeachment and the trial was such a catastrophe. I mean, this is the time to do something about convicting this kind of immoral, hateful behavior, and the Republicans, in the majority anyway, are either spineless or they're as corrupt as Trump. So it sure could have turned out a lot better and sent a message to future presidents that they are not going to get away with this kind of stuff."
Thank you, Deborah Ann, for that message. Listeners, we want to invite you into our conversation today. Our lines are open. 800-222-9455 is the number. What is your reaction to former President Trump's acquittal in the latest impeachment trial? Where do you think the country goes from here? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Joining us now to discuss this historic moment and where the country goes from here following impeachment are Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you, Brian.
Also joining us is Laura Washington, columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times and a political analyst at ABC 7 in Chicago. Laura, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be with you.
Laura, I want to begin with you. What was your reaction when you heard the verdict of the impeachment this weekend?
Well, it certainly wasn't shock or surprise. This was something that was expected from day one, even from before the impeachment process began. There was no expectation or very little expectation that there could be enough senators, Republican senators, there would need to be 17 who would move to convict the president. That expectation just was never there. But we had a little bit of a kerfuffle the morning of the final decision, when there was a call for witnesses, or particularly for one witness. And so there was, for us reporters in the room and watching, that's always a lot of fun when you get a little bit of uncertainty. But other than that, there was nothing uncertain about the outcome.
Yeah, definitely seemed foreordained. You know, Laura, a couple of weeks ago, you wrote a column saying Democrats should forget Trump and impeachment and instead focus on rescuing Americans from the pandemic and economic distress. Do you think impeachment was a mistake?
I wouldn't say it was a mistake, but I think in retrospect, it was a mistake in the sense that if you believe that Donald Trump committed grievous acts and should have been convicted for them, then obviously that did not happen. And there was, again, as I said earlier, there was never any expectation would be happening. What I basically was trying to say in that column is that this was a very divisive event, very divisive process in a time in the country when we are deeply divided, but also at a time when we need to be looking forward and when we have many other much bigger problems ahead. And so I thought it was a waste of a lot of important political capital and energy, especially because the outcome did not work out well for the Democrats.
Rick, before I bring you into the conversation, I want to read a couple of texts we got from our Text the 21st group. We asked listeners for their reactions this weekend on the verdict. Wilbur in Rantoul said, "The impeachment process is a joke. It needs to be redone. I think every senator had already made up their mind before it even began." And Lori in Champaign said, "Disgusted. How can supposed impartial jurors announce their decision before the evidence has been presented, let alone meet with the defense attorneys during the trial? I'm so tired of watching elected officials care more about their reelection than anything else." Unquote. Rick, in the end, 7 Republicans joined the 50 Democrats in voting to convict. And while we do get the sense that many minds were made up before the evidence and arguments were presented, I mean, what do you think of that? Do you think the senators were mostly impartial jurors in this case?
No, and I think a lot of people tend to forget, and Brian, you remember this from the Blagojevich impeachment here in Illinois, that impeachment, the entire process, it's a political process. It's not really designed as a legal process. This is a political vote that the senators are casting. So the idea of jurors, the Senate sitting as impartial jurors, that's just not reality. And it's not really the expectation. They can say that, but as the results bore out, we all kind of knew where this thing was headed.
I wonder, Rick, what was your impression of the evidence, right? Democrats centered their arguments on Trump's role in not just inciting the riots sort of that day, January 6th in Washington, but for months contesting the election results, even before the election had taken place,
right
up to the insurrection. And meanwhile, the defense argued that the trial was just unconstitutional. You can't go after a former president. And in any way, this president's speech was protected free speech. What did you make of those arguments?
Well, a couple of things that troubled me was I know that the House managers were trying to do, as you said, this wasn't just the January 6th speech. There was the whole build up to it and those kinds of things. But I always thought that, you know, trying to prove criminalizing speech is very difficult. And that was one of the things that the defense seized on. I was somewhat supportive of the fact that the House managers then kind of moved into the what happened while the Capitol was under siege and what were the actions of the commander in chief then. And that seemed to me a much easier kind of attachment for House managers to make the case to, is why didn't Trump call out law enforcement? Why did, according to reports, did he sit back and watch TV and was gleeful? Why didn't he do anything to try to protect his own vice president that he called a coward? I think there was a better attachment, but certainly the Trump defense using that argument about robust speech and asking senators if they want to criminalize speech, I think that was actually a very powerful argument.
And Laura Washington, what about you? Fight is a word that we hear from politicians all the time. It seems to have been, at least until now, one of those words that focus groups said that they wanted to hear from politicians. So you hear politicians, we're going to fight for health care. We're going to fight for civil rights, whatever it is. What do you make of that aspect of the Republican defense of the president?
Well, clearly they made a lot out of that. They presented 11, 12 minute video of, you know, just dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of examples of Democrats and Democratic allies using that word. And of course, it was very clipped. You didn't have any context for the most part in those examples. But clearly, fight is a very commonly used term, particularly in politics. And it doesn't necessarily connote fight and take over the Capitol and create its insurrection. So that's, I think that was the main point that they were trying to make. I think another issue that was important, and this relates again to the aftermath or what Rick refers to as the period of time after it actually after everything got off the ground on the 6th, was the issue of intent. And what did the president, or the president at the time, intend when he said, you got to go and fight like hell, you've got to go to the Capitol and you've got to take our country back? Did he intend, was he telegraphing, go over there, tear the place up, threaten people, you know, wreak havoc and violence? Well, that was a very difficult thing to be able to prove because he didn't say that. And when he talks about fighting, again, back to the example that the Republicans' defense made, Trump's defense made, fight is something that you do in politics. It's very commonplace, and it doesn't necessarily improve your intending to create a riot.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about former President Trump's acquittal in his second impeachment trial, where the country goes from here. Our guests are Laura Washington, columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times and a political analyst for ABC 7 in Chicago. Also, Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. We want to invite you to join our conversation. What's your reaction to the verdict in the impeachment trial? How do you hope the country moves forward from this historic moment? The number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. I want to play another voicemail and read a couple more texts from our Text the 21st group. We asked for reactions following the verdict this weekend. First up is a voicemail from Sheila.
I'm disappointed, but not completely surprised at what took place. What we should be doing is making sure that this does not happen again, that somehow we can stop this division and the idea that this is acceptable behavior. I think it went on way too long, and what we should have been doing is exposing the idea of how divisive the President Trump has been to so many, and that if we do not, we will repeat history again. That's my only concern, is that, no, I'm not surprised that an impeachment did not go through. But what I am surprised is that we continue to let this continue as it has, and we need to stop it. We need to stop it now. Thank you.
Meanwhile, and thank you, Sheila. Meanwhile, Jill in Savoy sent a text message saying, appalled that the GOP has no moral compass. The country is doomed for a repeat of Trumpism. And Lynn in Winnebago said, quote, disappointed but not surprised, ready to move on and hopefully hear a lot less of the T word, end quote. Laura, two contrasting views there insofar as that Jill fears Trumpism is here to stay. Lynn is ready to move on and forget about, as she said, the T word. Do you think it's possible for the country to move on, or does this acquittal only energize Trumpism?
Well, that was one of the points I made in my column. I think that it allows the former president to continue his campaign of grievance, his campaign that he has been cheated, and that since he became president, he has been the victim of a witch hunt, and this is just the latest example of that. So for those fervent followers of his who believe in that mantra, that will continue to be a whipping boy that he could use as he emerges politically. But I think Sheila's point is well taken, in that it's important that we do learn something from this experience and try to at least prepare the way for it not to happen again. And one hopeful thing that's come out of the trial is that there's been, it seems like, a universal or at least a bipartisan call for a 9/11 style commission or some kind of an investigative body that would look at that day and look at it from all sides, from all perspectives, and look at how the police handle things, look at how the legislators handle things, look at how the president conducted himself, so that we can create a record, a public record of who did what when and who didn't do what when, to put that out there, to hopefully have some lessons learned and perhaps some legislation passed, some new precautions or regulations put in place to ensure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I would be glued to that TikTok of, as we in the media call it, of what exactly was happening minute by minute that day. We need to take a break in a couple minutes, but I want to see if I can get a phone call in before we do. Frankie is on line 4 from DeKalb. Frankie, thanks for calling in.
Hi there. Thanks for listening to my question. I'm curious what folks think the effects on the First Amendment are going to be from this, because over the years we've seen things like suddenly money is speech protected under the First Amendment. And now if incitement, you know, it seems like a lot of legal scholars said that his speech isn't actually protected under the First Amendment, but that did seem to give cover to a lot of Republicans. And I'm curious what we're looking at going forward.
Okay, thank you for that question, Frankie. I don't think any of us on the panel are First Amendment lawyers, but Laura, do you have a perspective on that? Is incitement going to be more protected now after this?
I think, again, I'm not an expert. I think there needs to be a body of law, or there needs to be further litigation around that question. I think one of the other issues is something that happened in the aftermath of the Capitol attack was the president's removal from Twitter. And there are a lot of people that are raising questions about that, whether or not, because he was accused of, not convicted of, inciting a riot and making statements that led up to it, that he was removed. The Twitter, a private company, had the right and the ability to remove him and change his ability to engage in free speech. That's a big question.
Okay, we need to take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to ask Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune about the future, particularly of the Illinois Republican Party, where it goes from here, and Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who has been one of the most vocal Republicans. He's, of course, from Illinois, but he's had a big national profile in the past month or so, speaking out against the president, voting in favor of impeachment in the House. We'll talk about that. We're speaking with, again, Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, Laura Washington of the Chicago Sun-Times and ABC 7 in Chicago. And we're going to take more of your calls at 800-222-9455. This is the 21st. More to come after a break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and I am joined this part of the hour by Laura Washington of the Chicago Sun-Times, where she's a columnist and a political analyst also at ABC 7 in Chicago, and Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about impeachment and the former President Trump's acquittal in the impeachment trial that happened over the weekend. We are also taking your calls at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Rick, I want to talk about the future of the Illinois Republican Party, particularly Congressman Adam Kinzinger from Northern Illinois. He has been arguably the most vocal Republican in favor of impeachment. We got a few texts on this. Justin in Rockford says, quote, "For the first time in my life, in 35 years of voting, I voted for a Democratic candidate for president. I will do it again if Trump runs again. I'm proud of my Congressman Adam Kinzinger for stepping outside this weird football game called politics and being one of the lone Republican voices to stand up for what is right. I feel ashamed of my Republican Party." Close quote. That was Justin in Rockford. Meanwhile, Ricardo in Urbana said, "This is stepping off the cliff for Republican diehards. I predict a breakoff for those with the old Republican ideals." End quote. Meanwhile, on the other hand, Juanita left this voicemail for us over the weekend, and she said in part,
"I'm so happy to see that our president has been acquitted, which I knew he would be. To the Democrats, shame on you, shame on you. It is terrible that you have spent our money and our time on this foolish nonsense because you have a hate. We have people that are needing some laws done. We have many things we need to get done. If you can't do your job, get out of the Congress. We don't want you."
And I should say, Juanita also had other positive things to say about the Republicans who voted to acquit the president. Rick, we see the conflict there in the GOP over impeachment. What do you think is the end game for someone like Kinzinger, who's not only called the president out, voted in favor of impeachment, but has stood up to the pro-Trump part of the party and said, "I'm not afraid of you. I'll continue saying what I believe is right," especially as other Republicans like leader Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who've done similar things, have been censored by their party.
Well, I know, Brian, you asked about...
Censured, I should say. Censured.
Yes. Well, I know you asked about the Illinois Republican Party future, but it's very much the question on the national level. I mean, literally, as I'm watching Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell on the floor explaining that he felt Trump was culpable but didn't believe that he could be constitutionally impeached. At the very same time, I'm looking at my email, and from the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee is a fundraising email urging people to stand with Trump against impeachment. You know, that's the two sides of this story. And when you look at Adam Kinzinger and the fact that he's been very forthright in his opposition to Trump, particularly post-election, the idea that the election was stolen and spreading those kinds of false conspiracies, Kinzinger is still a lone wolf here. He wants to create a super PAC and be able to recruit and help fund candidates from mayor to Congress here. But what is the actual fundraising ability? What is possible there? He says he's getting a lot of congratulatory tweets for his stance. Does that turn into money? And of course, you have the president, the former president, on the other hand, who is already talking about his reemergence here, about wanting to keep the Trumpism movement going again. Kinzinger, you know, he was censured over the weekend by Iroquois County. In his view, when it comes to censuring politicians, he says, "I don't lose an ounce of sleep. I don't care about this. And if I lose, so be it." It's kind of a fatalistic attitude that you don't hear much from politicians. But I really don't know where his movement leads to.
But we've seen this struggle, Rick, right? I mean, you and I both covered Governor Bruce Rauner, and he, you know, at one point he went to a Trump rally but wasn't actually called up on stage or anything. He was just in the crowd there. By that point, he seemed to have lost that wing of the party. People knew he but, you know, this is after a couple of years where he wouldn't even hardly say the president's name. So Republicans in Illinois seem to have this difficult decision where there are a lot of passionate Trump supporters in the Republican Party in some parts of the state, and yet he is anathema in places like the suburbs.
Yeah, this is the reckoning, I think, that he's talking about, that Kinzinger has talked about for the Republican Party of, you know, where do you want to go forward? Do you want to still continue to be this party of Trump and owe your allegiance to one man? Or do you want to be a political party and owe your allegiances to not only your country, but also the fundamental things that the Republican Party has stood for?
Okay, let's listen to another voicemail from a listener. This one is from Mike in Monticello.
I just believe that ex-President Trump is a deeply flawed individual, and I wish I hadn't voted for him the first time around in 2016, but I thought a businessman, and I didn't believe all the other knocks against him. The government has become so toxic between Democrats and Republicans, you don't know what to believe anymore. So I voted for him, and I sure wish I hadn't, but Republicans and the Democrats better get their heads together and start amending some of these rules and laws and different constitutional parts of things so this kind of thing doesn't happen again. Because if we ever get another person in that wants to be king, will it just end up the same way again? And that sets dangerous precedents for the lack of integrity and honor and rule of law. I know I'm one person, and I know there's 74 million people that voted for Trump, but what a mess.
All right. Thank you, Mike, for sharing your perspective with us. Laura Washington, I'm curious what you make of Mike's comments about bridging the political divide between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, are both parties even existing in a shared reality at this point? Is coming together possible?
Well, I think you really hit your nail on the head with that, Brian, about the lack of a shared reality. And as the caller pointed out, you know, he says, you know, you don't know what to believe anymore. Both sides have a different set of facts, a different set of realities that they are operating from in some cases. And that a lot of that situation has been propagated by the former president and his very skillful way of and ability to use social media in particular to manipulate information, to manipulate facts, to put conspiracy theories out on the table in ways that his supporters would engage around. And I think on the other side, there's some of that same kind of factless misinformed arguments that are coming out of both sides of this conversation where it's very difficult to come together and be unified around any common goal when you don't even believe that the goals are real or that the information that supports those goals are real. And so I think, and you know, and part of that is the issue with the way the media has been perceived and treated. And you heard a lot of that discussion during the trial over the weekend, that the media is an arbiter or a propagator of misinformation, and we cannot be trusted with the facts and with information. And the media is an extremely important institution that does not, at least, you know, reporters like Rick and myself, that don't necessarily take sides, that are there to present information. And when there's a lack of trust on both sides in that institution, we're in big trouble.
Okay, I want to see if I can get one more call in. We have just a few minutes left in our segment here. Steve, you're on the line from rural Woodford County. Steve, thanks for holding.
Oh, you're very welcome. Just finished plowing my lane, actually, from all the snow
that we've had.
And my comment really is that I think we actually, as a political country, have more things in common than we have separate. And I've listened to the other commentators, and I know the polarization, but the facts are, if we look at them, that we actually do have more things in common. Give you two real quick examples. Big government. Do we want a government that's big enough to make the Louisiana Purchase and to make railroads all the way across the country, both of which has benefited the United States? I mean, those were huge, costly programs. But they were taken, and nobody during those times really criticized them. Additionally, if we look at what things really help America globally, we can agree on external trade. We can agree on treaties, things like that. We just need to get people who are knowledgeable about our history and about the facts to present those. And so I actually blame both Republicans and Democrats for creating that polarization. And to be completely self-indulgent here, I've written a charter for a new political party I call FIT. It's based on facts, integrity, and transparency. And I think if we could get people to focus on those, we would actually bring people together and build a very positive political culture.
Okay. Thank you so much for that call, Steve. We appreciate it. Good luck with your political party without expressing a view one way or the other on that. Laura, we have about a minute left. Any final reactions to what we heard from Steve there? I mean, is this a pox on both houses? Or, I mean, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that one of the major political parties here cheered on as a riot took place in the Capitol building.
I think that both parties share some blame in the political division. It didn't start with this trial. It didn't start on January 6th. It's been underway for decades in some ways. But I think we have our work cut out for us ahead. And that work should not be bipartisan. That should not be partisan work. I mean, just starting with COVID-19. And that would come back to earlier in our conversation, how we talked about the importance of moving ahead and solving that national crisis. Mm-hmm. This should be a golden opportunity and perhaps a model going forward of ways that Democrats and Republicans can get past the politicization of the pandemic and get it and bring us out of this safely and alive.
All right. Laura Washington of the Chicago Sun-Times and ABC Chicago and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Thank you both so much for being with me today.
Thank you.